Watergate Committee Chairman Sam Ervin says a compromise with the president on those White House tapes is okay, but he wants this agreement in writing. I'm Fulton Lewis in the Mutual Broadcasting System studios in Washington, D.C. My commentary after this.
Hi, Emerson Boozer here. You know, to win at any game, you need good people on the sidelines. Right now, there's a large group of troubled kids in New York, and they're desperately looking for the kind of leadership you can provide as a JBG, big brother or big sister. If you can spare an afternoon every couple of weeks, then you could really help a kid, and you'll be a winner, too. So call this number today.
Call 582-9100. That's 582-9100. Or write JBG, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, a non-sectarian organization, at 120 West 57th Street, New York City, New York.
Retiring North Carolina Democrat Senator Sam Ervin, the chairman of the Senate Watergate Committee, said today that he will welcome a compromise on subpoenaed White House materials, but he wants any future agreement to be in writing. He declared, "We've been anxious to resolve this matter all the time." He said the agreement should be written so that there could be no misunderstanding. Ervin's comments were made after Vice President Gerald Ford hinted yesterday at the possibility of a compromise should the committee trim its request for some 500 White House tapes and documents. The vice president said yesterday that those subpoenas were too broad and the committee should refine its demands, in his words, down to things that are relevant to the committee's responsibilities. Today, Chairman Ervin said that an earlier agreement with the White House regarding committee efforts to get the tapes' content was not in writing. He referred to the president's offer to turn over selected tapes to Mississippi Democrat Senator John Stennis. Today, Chairman Ervin declared, quote, "Way last summer, when the existence of those tapes was first disclosed, Senator Howard Baker and I offered to go to the White House and listen to selected tapes and then report back to the committee. The president turned that proposal down flatly. Then in October, he asked Senator Baker and myself to come up there and make an offer, in which he said he would turn the tapes over to Senator Stennis, who would listen to them and furnish us with a statement on what the tapes said about matters that our committee was authorized to investigate. We said we would check with the committee, but in the meantime, the White House issued a number of statements contradictory to my understanding of the president's proposal. We sent a telegram to the president saying that there was some confusion in the press regarding what he had proposed. We said that such terms as summaries and paraphrases were being used and that we were not willing to recommend acceptance of anybody's paraphrase, that we would accept only exactly what the tapes had said as ascertained by Senator Stennis. I asked the president to give me a statement in writing. I never did receive a specific answer. Later, I was notified that the proposal was withdrawn and that the tapes would be submitted only through the courts." Chairman Ervin said the latest list of documents wanted by his committee was, in his words, "not so much to ask for because this matter went on for 9 months with people corresponding with each other every day." The committee would not see all the material, he said, but only those portions that were deemed relevant by the court. He said White House compliance would not impede investigations by either the special prosecutor or the federal grand jury. Chairman Ervin concluded, "All we need would be enough time to make copies, and we would turn them over. As far as the tapes go, we could have them transcribed quickly and turn them over." In the meantime, the Senate Watergate Committee said today that Congress has eliminated the jurisdictional problem in its suit against the president. It asked the court to consider the matter on strictly its legal merits. The committee filed an amendment to its original complaint, in which it had asked the court to uphold its right to subpoena various White House tapes. Shortly before the amended complaint was filed, U.S. District Court Judge John Sirica reassigned the case to Judge Gerhard Gesell. Sirica, of course, had handled the original suit. In another related development, the U.S. Parole Board today ordered three of the five convicted Watergate burglars released on parole effective March 7th. The board freed Eugenio Martinez, Frank Sturgis, and Virgilio Gonzalez, who have served more than a year in prison and who are now confined at a federal prison camp at Elgin Air Force Base in Florida. The Watergate Parole Board now has granted parole to all five of the convicted defendants in the Watergate break-in. From the Mutual Studios in Washington, I'm Fulton Lewis, and that's the top of the news as it looks from here.
Come in. Welcome. I am E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the sound of suspense, the fear you can hear. For the next 52 minutes, we're going to take you into the world of mystery, into the world of terrifying imagination. The story you are going to hear concerns a question which has been asked since the first men on Earth were born and died. Is there a life after death? Is there a way to return from the grave? And if there is, can we come back in the body of a living creature? Even one that has claws instead of fingernails? Here is one chilling answer.
Dr. Singh, you have to tell me. Could my wife have come back as a bird, a sparrow, something like that?
Well, your wife was a rather big woman, Mr. Moresby, in a physical sense.
How about a snake? A seagull? How about a cat? A great, big, fat cat? A cat!
Our mystery drama, The Return of the Moresbys, was written especially for the Radio Mystery Theater by Henry Slessor and stars Patrick O'Neill. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
I'm Hi Brown, producer of Radio Mystery Theater. Before we begin our story, a word. This enterprise is new in modern network radio. But for many who grew up with radio drama, it's the return of a special kind of magic, a vast and magic theater where nothing is impossible, where the listener's imagination is the real star. And now that we're on, we'd like to hear from you. So much so that if you send us your name and address, you're eligible for one of 50 prizes each week for 3 weeks. 2 AM-FM stereophonos, 2 travel clock radios, and 46 anthologies of modern suspense. We'd like hearing how you feel about radio drama. But all you need do is send us your name and address to Mystery Theater, Box 50, Radio City Station, New York, 119. That's Box 50, Radio City Station, New York, 119. Offer good everywhere unless locally prohibited.
I'm Barry Farber, and tonight, first night of our new lineup here on WOR, I'll be talking at 8:15 to the man whose job it is to improve the image of President Nixon, and at 11:15, that same gentleman will be back, and he'll be joined by an American who wants President Nixon removed. That's the Barry Farber Show. Get the new timings, 8:15 to 9, and 11:15 clear through until John Gambling again the following morning.
Hey, Ma, what's for dinner? Hey, Ma, what you got? Hey, Ma, will it be much longer? My hunger's getting stronger and I can't wait. She loves her family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, Ma, what's for dinner? Hey, Ma, what you got?
What's for dinner? How about ShopRite skinless, dinner size, or beef franks? 1 pound package, just 89 cents. Serve with ShopRite frozen grade A spinach. 10 ounce packages, 6 for 89 cents. At your ShopRite.
She loves her family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, Ma, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
Now, here is Act One. Like all murder stories, sooner or later, it reaches the office of a daily newspaper.
You wanted to see me, Chief?
You bet I want to see you, Prouty. Come in and shut that door.
I bet I know what it's about. That story I filed on Richard Moresby, right?
I got a flash for you, Prouty. This is a newspaper office, not a fiction magazine. You take this story of yours and see if you can sell it to Weirdo Digest or something. But get it off my desk.
Now, wait a while, Max. I know it's offbeat, but I thought I handled it with a kind of a light touch.
Stories about murder can't be handled with a light touch. Not on this paper.
But it's accurate. I mean, this is exactly what the guy Moresby told me, just before he died.
Well, he must have been out of his head.
He asked for somebody to hear his story. That's how I got to meet him. I was at the hospital covering that subway accident.
Now, that story made sense to me. Nothing but nice, clear facts. But this nonsense...
Please, let me tell you about this guy. Maybe you'll change your mind.
All right, what about him?
Well, for one thing, he was a real distinguished-looking guy. The only thing peculiar about him was his eyes.
His eyes?
Yeah. They were the palest blue eyes I ever saw in a man. They weren't really blue at all. They were like silver.
Big deal. So he had silver eyes.
And when he started to tell me about himself, well, I just had to hear the whole story, Chief.
Yes, I was born in London, but my family moved to the States when I was young. They didn't improve much on the climate when they did. We lived in Vermont. I don't think I was ever warm enough until the age of 24 when I moved to Southern California. I lived on beaches. A superb swimmer, a superior surfboarder, and a terrible bum. It was on the beach at Malibu that I met the woman who was to become my wife. Her name was Una. She was as pale as a gardenia with bones. Una had more bones than any other woman I've ever met.
Lovely day, isn't it?
I beg your pardon?
I said it's a beautiful day. I don't think I've ever seen the ocean look prettier.
Frankly, the Pacific always looked a little muddy to me.
I wonder if that's what Balboa said when he first saw it.
Well, he probably said, what a great place for surfing.
Ah, I see you have a surfboard.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I think I see a wave that I like. Will you excuse me?
Oh, I wish I had the nerve to try it.
Yeah, you really should. Well, bye now.
Maybe I'll ask my chauffeur to teach me.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
Charles, my chauffeur. He's very good at sports.
You know, come to think of it, that wave doesn't look so good after all. By the way, my name is Richard. Richard Moresby.
How do you do? My name is Una.
Una Vandermeer. That was her name. As soon as I realized that she was from the Vandermeer family, she didn't seem half as bony as she did before. In fact, not only did I become accustomed to Una's appearance, I was even able to tolerate her inane conversation.
Can't you just feel the mystery of the stars, Richard? Sometimes I feel their vibrations as if they're trying to communicate with me. Do you ever feel that?
Well, sometimes, I suppose.
I really think we must be one with the universe, don't you? I really believe there's just one great universal soul, and we're all part of it. Don't you think so, too?
Yes, of course. Right on, as they say. You see what I mean? She talked that way all the time. From the first day of our honeymoon. Well, it was a fine honeymoon just the same. It lasted a whole year on the beaches of the Caribbean, on the French Riviera. I got browner and browner. Una got freckles. Finally, we returned to our home in Los Angeles and settled down to a quiet, comfortable marriage. Is that your playing?
It's sitar music, darling. Oh, it's just so spiritual.
What made you buy the record?
No, Dr. Singh recommended it.
Who?
Dr. Singh, at the Temple of Metempsychosis, you know.
The Temple of what?
Metempsychosis. I told you about joining the temple last week. Oh, Richard, sometimes I think you don't listen to me.
Now, as you may know, Southern California abounds in quasi-religious organizations. And she'd gone through a number of them without discovering the universal soul at any of their altars.
Darling, please come to one of Dr. Singh's lectures. He's such a magnificent speaker. He emits such vibrations.
And I went. You see what an obliging husband I was? And actually, it turned out to be more interesting than I thought. The temple itself was unpretentious, and Dr. Singh was an impressive man. And when he spoke, I realized why his message had such appeal for Una, because he preached a doctrine that combined eternal life with the love of small animals.
The soul is immortal. The soul cannot die. The soul, upon leaving the body, must make its passage elsewhere. There is a science called eschatology, which deals with the last four things: death, judgment, heaven, and hell. It is the most ancient of all sciences, and from its wisdom has come the inescapable certainty of the transmigration of souls.
Yeah, I know it's a bit weird, but stay with it.
And where does the soul go? According to the wise men of all generations past, the soul departs from the mouth of the dying. It is, consequently, a small thing. A bird, a snake, a mouse, a dove, or a hawk, a dog, a cat, an insect. For these small creations of God are empty vessels placed upon earth for only one purpose: to house the departing souls of humanity, so that they need not wander forever in a trackless eternity.
Yeah, it's pure rot, of course.
But that's what the man said, and Una sat there and believed every single word.
Oh, wasn't he marvelous, Richard? Isn't it wonderful that the soul never dies, that we can all come back as little animals?
I'm not sure I want to come back as an animal.
But you'd still be you, Richard. Oh, don't you see?
Mm-hmm. Well, oh, by the way, what was that envelope you handed Dr. Singh after the meeting?
The envelope? Oh, that was my donation, of course.
Your donation to the temple?
Yes, to support the work of Dr. Singh, to open other temples around the world.
Uh-huh. Well, how much money was in the envelope?
What does it matter, Richard?
I'm just curious.
$2,000.
Una, you go to that temple once a week. Do you always give that kind of donation?
Oh, it's all in a very good cause, Richard.
Well, in an equally good cause, that of finding out exactly how much of my wife's money was supporting this nonsense, I sneaked a look at Una's checkbook. The answer astonished me. Not only had my wife put more than $30,000 into Dr. Singh's collection plate, she had also donated some $20,000 more to various institutions for the care and feeding of cats, dogs, and birds.
It was so kind of you to honor us with a visit, Dr. Singh. I know how terribly busy you are.
On the contrary, you were kind to invite me to your lovely home.
Oh. Now tell me, Dr. Singh, what determines the kind of animal one becomes when the soul escapes after death?
Mrs. Moresby, that is a question which has baffled wise men for countless generations.
But isn't it possible to do, well, research?
Yes, Mrs. Moresby. I don't doubt that we could find the answer to such great questions if only we had the proper resources.
You mean like laboratories and so forth?
No, the research I mean would be conducted merely by spreading the word of metempsychosis to the farthest corners of the earth, and let human experience reveal the truth to us. But, unfortunately, that would require money, A great deal more money than the movement has at present.
Well, it seems to me you don't do badly. Well, there you are.
Hello, Richard.
Where have you been all morning?
Right here, in my little sewing room.
Don't tell me you were sewing.
Oh, don't be silly. Actually, I've been composing something.
A letter?
Oh, something more important than that. Richard, do you realize that I have no last will and testament?
Well, why should you? Healthy young chicken like you?
I can't call myself young anymore, Richard.
You'll always be young to me, darling.
Oh, that's very sweet. But just the same, it's only practical to have a will. Would you read it over, Richard, and see if it... Well, if it sounds legal enough?
Certainly. Well, let's see now. I, Una Vandermeyer Moresby, a resident of the city of Los Angeles, state of California, residing at 8 Sheridan Drive, being over the age of 21 and of sound and disposing mind and memory. Darling, this is superb. Where on earth did you get the language?
Well, to tell you the truth, I copied it out of Daddy's will.
The one that left you $10 million?
Yes.
Well, I don't see how you could go wrong. Let's see now. Not acting under duress, menace, fraud, or undue influence of any person whomsoever. And...
Good Lord, Una.
What's the... What is it? What?
You're not serious about this.
Oh, about making a will? Well, of course I am.
This bequest to the temple of mumbo-jumbo.
What's wrong with it? Now, listen, darling. I told you how important Dr. Singh's work is. But it requires money to carry it on. Tons of money. So the least I can do is to help the poor man as much as I can.
But you're giving him 90% of your entire fortune.
Ah, you'll still have $1 million if I go first, Richard. Isn't that enough?
No, it isn't. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. Don't you realize that man is a fraud, a charlatan?
What?
Oh, for heaven's sake, Una, open your eyes. Don't you realize the simple truth? Your money won't build any temples. It's just going to line the pockets of that turbaned phony.
Richard, what a terrible thing to say. Well, you told me you liked Dr. Singh, that you were very impressed by his theory of transmigration.
Darling, I was only saying all that to please you. But now I'm telling you that the only thing Dr. Singh is planning to transmigrate is your money into his savings account. And frankly, I'm not going to let him do it.
Richard, what are you doing? You're tearing up my will.
That's right.
How dare you do such a thing? It's my money, and I'll do whatever I please with it.
Una, darling, I just want you to have a chance to come to your senses.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with my senses. I can see very clearly what the real trouble is. If I didn't leave a will, all my money would go to you, wouldn't it?
Well, naturally, I'm your husband. You don't have any other relatives.
And that's why you're acting this way. It's just plain and simple greed.
Una, listen to me.
No, it's all right. It's all right. I'm glad you tore up that will, Richard, because I realize now that I was quite wrong.
Do you?
Yes. It's a mistake to leave only 9 million of my money to the temple. I'm going to leave all of it to Dr. Singh.
When Una actually drafted that incredible document and called our attorney for a Monday morning appointment, I realized that I had to do something very drastic before the weekend was over. I had to kill my poor, misguided wife. I had to make her one with the universe.
It's obvious that Mr. Moresby is going to be a very reluctant murderer. The question is, will his reluctance get in the way of his efficiency? We'll get the details when we return shortly with Act Two.
Oh, hurry!
When you say butter, you said a lot of things nobody else can say, yeah. When you say butter, you've gone as far as you can go to get the very best.
Why do some people think Bud is sort of special? Well, go ahead and find out why. For yourself.
I mean, you don't really need me to tell you. Just try a bud and think about it and decide for yourself. Well, sure, the Budweiser people really do believe that brewing beer right does make a difference. But even that's up to you.
Because the king of beers is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser, you said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, yeah. St. Louis.
I'm Barry Farber, and tonight, first night of our new lineup here on WOR, I'll be talking at 8:15 to the man whose job it is to improve the image of President Nixon, and at 11:15, that same gentleman will be back, and he'll be joined by an American who wants President Nixon removed. That's the Barry Farber Show. Get the new timings, 8:15 to 9, and 11:15 clear through until John Gambling again the following morning.
While the lower speed limits may be slowing you down, Suburban Savings is setting your savings full speed ahead. For a limited time, Suburban Savings is going the limit and paying a top 7.9% effective annual yield on all new four-year 7.5% savings certificates. And Suburban guarantees it for four full years. In order to earn this annual effective yield, interest must remain on deposit for the full year. A $5,000 minimum is all you need to get your savings moving. Suburban compounds interest continuously from day of deposit paid quarterly. Early withdrawal prior to maturity is subject to a substantial penalty. Let your savings go the limit. Go to Suburban's convenient offices in Hackettstown, Sparta, Bayonne, Edgewater, Elmwood Park, Emerson, Morris Plains, Nutley, and Paramus.
This is WOR New York, your station for the Mystery Theater.
Now let's return to Richard Moresby. In order to find him, we'll have to search the highway, for Richard has taken his white Jaguar out for a spin. But there he is now.
On Saturday morning, I took a little spin in my XKL and did some thinking on the open road. I didn't want to kill poor Una, of course. The whole idea was repellent. But on the other hand, the thought of Dr. Singh spending the fortune that was rightfully mine was even more abhorrent. However, I decided I would make one more stab at a reconciliation. Darling, may I come in?
It's your living room, too.
It doesn't feel like it. Matter of fact, I've felt like a stranger in this house for the past 2 days.
I suppose that's my fault.
Well, you haven't been exactly cordial, have you?
I've hardly been home, Richard. I spent all day yesterday at the temple and all morning at the pet rest kennels.
And how are all the little souls doing?
You just won't stop being irreverent, will you? It's been my money all along, hasn't it, Richard? From the very beginning, you were attracted to my money.
Oh, now, darling, if you thought that, you would never have married me.
I didn't want to believe it. I don't want to believe it now.
Well, now, how can I prove to you that you're mistaken?
Richard, do you really want to prove it?
Of course, I'll do anything you say.
All right. Now, I know exactly what you can do. You can let me leave my money to Dr. Singh and the temple.
The whole 10 million?
Yes, because that's the only way I'll know that it's me you love.
Well, you can't say I didn't try. But Una's decision now left me with absolutely no alternative. I was still deeply unhappy about the necessity of taking her life. However, fate was kind to me that very afternoon.
Now you're sure that you want me to continue reading, Richard?
Of course, darling.
Well, I'm sort of embarrassed about this part. It's a paper that I wrote myself.
Oh, something you wrote?
Yeah, I wrote it this morning. I was going to show it to Dr. Singh. It's, well, it's a sort of a poem. It's called Death.
Snappy title.
Hope I can read my own handwriting. Death has become nothing to me. Death holds no fear for me. Come, Death, I welcome you. Lead me to the woods, the waters, the air above the earth. Come, take me, Death. Your touch is kind. Richard? Oh, Richard, why do you look like that? Is it really that terrible?
Oh, terrible. Oh, no, no, my darling, it's beautiful.
Do you mean it?
You must give it to me, Una. I must have it.
You like it that much?
Yes, I certainly do.
Well, I'll type it up for you, Richard.
No, I must have the original. Now, just the way you wrote it.
Oh, darling, I'm so flattered. What will you do with it?
Oh, I'm going to put it in a frame, of course. And I know just where I'm going to hang it.
Yes, I could hardly believe my ears. Una had written her own suicide note in her own handwriting. It was truly karma at work. Now there was no question of failure and no longer any need for delay.
Oh, what a lovely idea this was, Richard. Candlelight dinner for two.
Yes. I thought you'd enjoy it.
It's so sweet of you to handle the whole menu with cook. You spoil me shamefully.
And that night, I spoiled her just a bit more by bringing hot cocoa to her in bed.
Oh, Richard, you shouldn't have bothered.
But I know how you like your hot cocoa before retiring, Una. You can't get to sleep without it.
No, but Parker could have brought it to me.
Oh, no, this is something I had to do myself.
Oh.
Oh, drink it down now.
Yes. I'm drinking it.
Does it taste all right?
Oh, it tastes just fine.
Now, that was very good news, because I'd prepared the hot cocoa myself, and I had no idea whether 25 melted sleeping pills would seriously affect the flavor. Finally, Una was all tucked in for the night. I went into my study, picked up the poem she had written for Dr. Singh, and brought it to the bedroom. I placed it carefully on the night table beside her. Then I bent over my sleeping darling to see if she was getting along all right. She was very, very quiet. And then a dreadful thing happened. Una opened her eyes.
Richard.
Hush, hush, darling. Now go back to sleep.
Richard, I'm sick.
No, my love. No, you're only sleepy.
Cocoa tasted so strange. I didn't want to upset you, Richard, but I'm sick.
Now, you'll feel much better in the morning, Una. I promise you, tomorrow morning you'll be one with the universe.
Richard, that paper.
What paper, darling?
My poem for Dr. Singh. What's it doing there?
I was just reading it over, darling, that's all.
And that bottle of my sleeping pills. Oh, it's empty. The bottle is empty. Oh, Richard. Richard. What have you done?
Nothing, darling, nothing. Now, go to sleep.
Coco. You put sleeping pills in it. All of them.
Don't try to get up, Una, please.
You're,
now, don't.
Trying to kill me. You're trying to murder.
Now, for heaven's sake, Una, now stop saying things like that. Do you
help.
Want the servants to hear?
Help somebody. Help.
Now, come on, lie down. Lie down, Una, for heaven's sake. Come on, now, lie down. Lie down. There. That's better.
You won't get away with it. You won't get away with it, Richard. I promise you.
Anything you say, darling.
I'll come back, Richard. You know I'll be back.
Yes. Yes, of course. Just welcome death, Una. The way you wrote in your little poem.
I'll be back. I swear it.
The funeral was held 2 days later. It was a magnificent occasion, of course. I gave Una a farewell that was consistent with her vast fortune. Everything was the best. Coffin, flowers, preacher, everything. Her burial place was one of the choicest bits of real estate at Forest Lawn. The only discordant note was the fact that Dr. Singh insisted on saying a few words at the service. They were familiar words, but frankly, they gave me a slight bit of a chill.
The body of Una Moresby is dead, but her soul lives on. The soul cannot die. The soul is immortal. It has left the earthly remains of this woman and has sought the body of a small living thing. There it will abide until the Almighty is ready to choose its next home. Mourn not the end of Una Moresby, for there is no end.
I couldn't help congratulating myself on how well everything had gone. When I called for medical attention the night of Una's death, the physician was only too ready to declare her a suicide. The police had to be informed, naturally, and they, too, agreed with the doctor's verdict. Una had died by her own hand, and she had died without a will. There was simply no question that the matter would be probated in my favor. Suddenly, I realized I was not only rich, but a rich widower. What vistas opened for me? The devil. Look out, you stupid mongrel. Dog trying to get run over. I admit I was shaken up by it. I mean, it was sort of a coincidence, you know? Right after the funeral and all that. I was very glad to be home again, you can be sure.
Excuse me, Mr. Moresby.
Yes, Parker.
Cook is worried about the raccoon, sir.
The what?
There's been a raccoon at the kitchen door all morning, and Cook is badly alarmed, I'm afraid. I've tried to scare it away, but it keeps returning.
A raccoon, for heaven's sake? Why don't you just shoot it and make a coat out of it?
I was wondering if you wished me to call the game warden, sir.
Please, Parker, do whatever you please about it. I'm going to take a nap.
Yes, sir. Very good, sir.
I went upstairs at once, undressed, and got into bed. It was a warm day, and yet I found myself cold. I got out the electric blanket and soon felt very cozy indeed. In fact, I felt so much better that I made a phone call. Hello, may I speak to Rachel? Thank you very much. Hello, Rachel?
Yeah, who's this?
Rachel, you probably don't even know my name, but it's Moresby, Richard Moresby.
Who?
You met me at the club numerous times. I'm the rather distinguished-looking gentleman who sits at the table on the far right corner.
Oh, yeah, well, that's not my station.
Yeah, I know it isn't, and I've always regretted it. Frankly, I would have enjoyed my lunches at the club even more if you had served them.
Listen, I'm pretty busy right now.
Well, but what I wanted to find out was if you're busy this evening.
Oh, what'd you have in mind?
Oh, a little, quiet dinner, perhaps.
Is that all you had in mind?
Why don't we just wait and see? I can pick you up outside the club whenever you're free.
Yeah, how I know it's you. I mean, I'm still not sure which gentleman you are.
I'll be sitting in an XKL Jaguar. Do you think you'll recognize it?
A Jag? I get off at 6:30.
See you then. Yes, I was feeling very good now. Very good indeed. I would have drifted off into a pleasant sleep except for one thing. For a moment, I thought a bomb had gone off in the room. Then I realized it was nothing more than a bird. A foolish sparrow had dived in headfirst into the plate glass window of the bedroom and now lay stunned on the carpet. I looked at the thing's fluttering little heart, and suddenly I was struck by a terrifying palpitation of my own. The dog, the raccoon, the bird.
Good Lord. Could one of them have been Una?
Has Una Moresby returned from the grave? Nonsense. Such things don't really happen. But perhaps we should reserve judgment until I return shortly with Act 3.
And now another tale of the ball and chain. At Kellogg's Special K presents
The Good, the Bad, and the Heavy.
Why is that cowboy wearing a ball and chain?
Because carrying around extra pounds can be just like carrying around a ball and chain.
How symbolic.
What will it be, senor?
Give me the Special K breakfast.
Here you go. Ball and Special K, skim milk, orange juice, and coffee. Say, don't I know you from someplace?
You probably don't recognize me with my ball and chain. I used to be 10 pounds lighter, but I'm getting back that way by exercising and eating smart at every meal. Starting with this here Special K breakfast.
What's so special?
It's less than 240 calories, 99% fat-free, and delicious. It's going to help me get rid of this here ball and chain.
I bet your horse will be glad to hear that.
Another ball and chain fights the dust.
Your happy ending could begin with the Kellogg's Special K breakfast.
That's Kellogg's Special K.
That's right.
Good night.
This is the Mystery Theater you're listening to. New on WOR 710. Tonight at 10 o'clock... Me, John Wingate. The Wingate News Digest. Another mystery. It pops up suddenly in Queens Village. Real estate blockbusting. Old story, right? But with a new twist. Blacks and whites protesting real estate blockbusting. Also, a syzygy. What is a syzygy? If you live in Syosset, you'll see it tomorrow morning. It's a configuration that'll bring abnormally high tides all over the place. The Wingate News Digest. And children going to school this morning when it was dark in daylight saving time. How did they react? Charles Berkowitz, school principal, will tell you. And will tell you also he doesn't believe the gas shortage. Wingate News Digest. Tonight, 10 o'clock, right here. WOR.
Now let's see if common sense has returned to our hero. He's doing a sensible thing right now. He's taking a good, refreshing shower.
By the time evening came, I was feeling better. All my peculiar notions about Una's animal reincarnation seemed ludicrous as I stood in front of the shaving mirror. I thought about the delicious young woman that was waiting for me at the club. I'd admired Rachel's way with a tray for months, but ever faithful to my wife, I hadn't done more than gaze from afar. But now, things were going to be different. Yes, who is it?
It's Parker, sir.
Yes, come in, Parker. It's all right.
Excuse me, sir. A bit of emergency in the kitchen.
Well, what is it?
A snake, sir.
A what?
Cook insists that there's a snake curled up in the telephone wire.
Oh, that's ridiculous, Parker.
Cook says it's there, Mr. Moresby. They do get into the house sometimes.
Well, tell Cook she's seeing things. Tell her to stop nipping at the cooking sherry, and she'll soon stop seeing snakes.
Yes, sir.
What was that?
I would guess it was Cook, sir.
Oh, for heaven's sake, go down and see to it, Parker.
I'll try, sir. But I'm not very good with snakes, sir.
Well, what do you think I am, an expert? But that wasn't the end of it. 10 minutes later, Parker was back upstairs saying that the snake had left the kitchen and run into the living room. No, I suppose snakes don't run, they slither. It slithered into the living room and was now embracing still another telephone wire, obviously mistaking it for a long-lost love. But then, another unsettling thought came into my mind. What if the snake... No, that was ridiculous. Hello?
Hi. Is this Mr. Moresby?
Yes, who's this?
Rachel, from the club.
Oh, yes, Rachel, what is it?
Listen, could you make it 6 instead of 6:30? I'll try to sneak out a little early.
Yes, fine, I'll be there as soon as I can.
In the Jaguar, right?
Yes, in the Jaguar.
Listen, the reason I want to leave earlier is because my husband always picks me up at 6:30.
What was that?
So I asked one of the girls I work with to tell him that I got another job someplace. He won't care. He likes me to earn extra money.
Yes, I see.
So, just to make the story look good, I guess you'll have to lend me a few dollars after our date.
Yes, of course.
And listen, I really do remember you, Sugar. You're the handsome one with the cute bald head. See you soon.
As it happens, I have a very full head of hair. But distressing as Rachel's telephone call was, an even more disturbing thought intruded. The snake was in the telephone wire. What if the snake had been trying to listen in on the extension phone? I knew the idea was absurd, but I couldn't help a superstitious shiver of dread. In fact, I was so troubled that I decided to forego my date with Rachel, the waitress. It wouldn't matter anyway. She'd be angry at some man at the club with a cute, bald head. The next day, I did the only thing that really relaxed me. I went to the beach. It proved to be an excellent idea. I stretched out on the golden sand and let the sun warm me. I listened to the waves beating against the shore. I listened to the haunting cries of seagulls circling overhead. Suddenly, I was aware that the gulls which had been hovering over the water were now hovering over me. Now, instead of their cries being sad and plaintive, now they seemed menacing. I stood up hastily, but the gulls seemed to be increasing in number. I saw their sharp, pointed beaks, their raking claws. They were predators, of course. How many times had I seen them swoop into a dive and snatch up some poor fish out of the sea? And there was one seagull in particular. Its beady eyes seemed to be staring at me. No, it was my imagination, of course. I wasn't a fish. I was a man. But just the same, I found myself, running down the beach. Running for dear life. And that's when I knew it was time to see a doctor.
Yes, Mr. Moresby. I'm very pleased that you honored the temple with your presence.
I'm grateful that you're willing to see me, Dr. Singh. I realized that, well, you had a disappointment.
A disappointment? I'm afraid I don't understand.
I know my wife made certain promises to you concerning her will.
I believe she mentioned some modest donation.
She wasn't in her right mind, of course. I mean, when she took those sleeping pills.
Yes, it was very sad. I trust that she has found the peace and happiness that she sought.
Frankly, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, about whether you really believe that my wife is... Well, that she's some kind of animal right now.
But of course I believe it, Mr. Moresby. I don't merely believe. I'm positive. When your wife passed from this world into the next, her soul made its escape.
Yes, I know how it goes, but what I'd really like your opinion about is what sort of animal do you think she might be now?
I told you, Mr. Moresby, we have no way of knowing.
But can't you take a guess? I mean, you said it might be influenced by a person's karma. Am I quoting you right?
Yes, The kind of person she was in life may well determine the kind of animal she is now. Your wife was soft. Your wife was gentle. Your wife was independent in spirit. Now, what animal does that remind you of?
I don't know. I can't think.
Then go home and think about it, Mr. Moresby. Go home and try to be one with the universe.
I went home, and I tried to be one with the universe. Now, when that didn't work, I tried being one with a bottle of scotch. I was still in the library, asleep in the big leather chair, when I heard the noise in the cellar. I simply had to investigate. I looked into the cellar and found that one bare bulb wasn't enough for a thorough search. I found a flashlight and went down the cellar steps. At first there was nothing I could see. But then, it was an empty oil can. Swiftly, my flashlight picked out the culprit. At first, I thought it would turn out to be a mouse, but instead, it was a large, white cat. I don't like cats. I never have. Skulking, cynical creatures. When the beam of my flashlight hit it, the cat froze. I saw it was an alley cat. Its fur shaggy, its eyes baleful in the light. It was fat, and yet it was bony, too. I said scat, but it didn't scat. Instead, it started to walk toward me. And I knew for certain what Dr. Singh had meant. I knew for certain I was looking at the reincarnation of my wife. As soon as that hideous apparition howled at me, I made a cowardly dash for the cellar door. Once I was on the other side, I remembered the hunting rifle that Una had given me for Christmas. It stood unused in an upstairs closet. I found it, I loaded it, and brought it back to the cellar. I hadn't fired a rifle since boyhood. I stood on the top of the stairs with my flashlight picked out the ghostly white form of the cat. I put down the light, raised the weapon, and squeezed the trigger. The report was deafening, but the recoil was worse. My precarious balance on the top step was lost. I fell to the bottom. I tried to get up again,
but the pain in my right leg was agonizing. I found out later that it was broken. But the cat was still alive. And it was regarding me at eye level now. Its fur matted with plaster dust. Its eyes filled with hatred. I tried to crawl toward my fallen rifle. Just as I saw the creature advancing toward me, I screamed, "Una!" Oh, my hand was on the rifle now, grasping it. Too quickly in my panic, my fingers touched the trigger and the rifle went off again.
Well, that's how Moresby ended up in the hospital, Chief, with a broken leg and a bullet in his hip.
And then he died.
But I think he was telling the truth. You could see it in his eyes.
His silver eyes, right?
Yeah, his silver eyes.
And you really believe that the guy's wife came back as a cat to get her revenge?
What does it matter? It's still a good story.
Sorry, Prouty, I can't okay it.
Well, what if I got more details? What if I talked to this Dr. Singh? If I went to the Moresby cellar and found that cat?
And what would you do then? Ask her if she's Mrs. Moresby?
I still think it's worth a try, Chief.
I'll tell you what, Prouty. What are you doing for lunch?
I hadn't thought about it.
Well, think about buying my lunch.
You?
There's a pretty good restaurant right around the corner where the Moresbys live. Now, we can get a bite there, and then check out that cellar. This is where it happened, huh?
Moresby fell from these steps when he fired that rifle. Hey, you can still see the plaster dust where the bullet hit.
Yeah, I see it. But I don't see any white cat.
It might be hiding someplace.
Or it might be a figment of his imagination.
Maybe so. Hold it. Did you hear something?
No.
Listen. There it is. Look.
Hmm. It's a cat, all right. And it looks like it just found its supper.
Oh, that mouse is still alive.
Yeah, but not for long. Look at it squirm.
He's eating it.
Yep. And there goes your mouse.
Oh, my God.
What's the matter, Prouty? Never see a cat eat a mouse before?
Chief, did you see that mouse?
Sure, I saw it.
But didn't you notice something?
Like what?
Its eyes. Chief, did you ever see a mouse with eyes like that? They were so pale blue, they were almost silver.
And so the cat and mouse game comes to an end. But according to Dr. Singh, there is no end. Perhaps Richard Moresby will have his turn next in another afterlife. I'll be back in a few moments.
I'm Hi Brown, producer of Radio Mystery Theater. This enterprise is new in modern network radio. But for many who grew up with radio drama, it's the return of a special kind of magic. A vast and magic theater where nothing is impossible. Where the listener's imagination is the real star. And now that we're on, we'd like to hear from you. So much so that if you send us your name and address, you're eligible for one of 50 prizes each week for 3 weeks. 2 AM-FM stereo phonos, 2 travel clock radios, and 46 anthologies of modern suspense. We'd like hearing how you feel about radio drama. But all you need do is send us your name and address to Mystery Theater, Box 50, Radio City Station, New York, 119. That's Box 50, Radio City Station, New York, 119. Offer good everywhere unless locally prohibited.
This is the Mystery Theater you're listening to. New on WOR 710. Tonight at 10 o'clock, me, John Wingate. The Wingate News Digest. Another mystery. It pops up suddenly in Queens Village. Real estate blockbusting. Old story, right? But with a new twist. Blacks and whites protesting real estate blockbusting. Also, a syzygy. What is a syzygy? If you live in Syosset, you'll see it tomorrow morning. It's a configuration that'll bring abnormally high tides all over the place. The Wingate News Digest. And children going to school this morning when it was dark in daylight saving time. How did they react? Charles Berkowitz, school principal, will tell you. And will tell you also he doesn't believe the gas shortage. Wingate News Digest. Tonight, 10 o'clock, right here. WOR.
Do you believe in reincarnation? Do you believe the dead return? We have to believe it, because here we are, the reincarnation of radio drama. We hope you'll keep us alive by listening again to the Radio Mystery Theater. Our cast included Patrick O'Neill, Marion Seldes, Nick Pryor, and Dan Ocko. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. Now, a preview of our next tale.
Are you all right, Jerry?
Yeah. I'm all right. But I saw him.
Who?
Oh, guy I was in the army with.
The two of you. Were you close?
He was my buddy.
Well, when was the last time you saw him in person?
The night he was killed.
Have you ever seen him again? Like you thought you did just now?
No. No, this is the first time.
Well, maybe you need a rest, Jerry.
Hattie, why now? Why tonight, after all these years?
Well, you say you saw him last the night he died in battle. Well, the sight of him dead must have stayed with you always.
But that's not how I just saw him, Patty. He wasn't in uniform. He was in civilian clothes.
You might have pictured him as he looked at a happier time.
I never saw him in civilian clothes.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams. This is WOR New York, your station for the Mystery Theater. If you live or work in northern New Jersey and you're having personal problems, Clergy Consultants is ready to help you get it back together again. Call 201-766-1925 for a consultation. News is next with John Scott at 8 o'clock.